Hello, welcome. This is take two. Very excitingly, I've just had an email from myself.
Have you?
And you.
How have you done that?
Says, Simon, be the first to get tickets to our Halloween live show special. I'm obviously, I imagine you'll have
Are
one of these as
well. Are we buying tickets?
Yeah. So it says, join us at our biggest ever live show for an evening of things that go bump in the night at the Indigo, the O2 in London, 31st of October. Do you know about this?
Tell me more.
Your exclusive pre-sale link. As well as seeing Mark and Simon record their podcast live.
Think of the joy.
I mean, to be honest, that's enough. With some very special guests, you will be treated to a whole host of spooky special features, including the announcement of the World Cup of Horror Films and the least scary horror film of all time. I quite like that. That's a good idea. And a whole host of ghoulish games to make Halloween 22 one to remember. I'm just reading the email here. Grab your tickets ahead of Friday's general release. Well, obviously, Friday has been and gone.
Well, by the time you're listening to this, although while we're recording it, it hasn't.
No, but obviously no one is going to hear this until after that moment.
You never know. They might sneak it out. But I mean, it might leak.
Kermodemayo.com is where you need to go, Mark, to get tickets.
Okay.
And I think I have to buy my tickets, but it says, see you there.
Would you buy one for me?
Mark and Simon. Follow now. Keep up to date with Kermodemayo.
There is a story, isn't there, about some actor going to the theatre and realising while sitting in the theatre that they're actually meant to be in the play. I mean, I'm sure it's apocryphal, but no, you know, realising. I mean, you know,
good anecdote though.
It is a good anecdote. Can I just tell you an interesting thing? We talked in take one about See How They Run,
which
is set around the Mousetrap. Do you know what the connection between the Mousetrap and the Wicker Man is?
Kevin Bacon.
No, but I love the fact that is your default answer. Mm-hmm. The Mousetrap, the Wicker Man, was originally inspired by a novel called Ritual, which was written by an actor understudying in the Mousetrap during its extended run. And he knocked it off in a week when he wasn't called upon to do anything. And Ritual was then optioned as a screenplay. Ritual bears very little relationship to the Mousetrap, but technically the novel upon which The Wicker Man is based in a legal fashion was written in the dressing room of the Mousetrap by an understudying actor not having the chance to go on and say, and I put it to you.
Another top anecdote. That was very good. I had absolutely no idea about that. That's very good.
That's good.
Interesting email from Christian Mole. Fantastic name. Read a great article by The Guardian's Gwilym Mumford this morning.
Okay.
By the way, Christian is a legacy listener, an occasional emailer.
Was the article Why Mark Kermode Should Be Fired from The Observer?
No.
No. Okay.
Though The Observer has shown
remarkable good taste
in its book reviewing.
It has. I stumbled upon this roundup of the best thrillers and crime fiction. When I say I stumbled upon it,
I gave it to you
on your phone.
Yes,
and it said
it was very good.
It was a big thumbs up, wasn't it? Can you remember the quotation?
I can't.
I'm sure you can.
Maybe I'll read it out in take three.
That would be great.
Anyway, Gwilym Mumford, in this article, crystallised completely some thoughts I've been having recently, which compelled me to put pen to paper / fingers to keyboard.
Okay.
Mark has long been predicting a world of simultaneous streaming / cinema movie releases and has said he has no problem with it.
I don't.
Well, it's pretty much here, and I have a huge problem with it.
Which is?
Increasingly, any films that aren't mega releases seem to be given incredibly short runs in cinemas. The Green Knight and In the Earth were just two films last year, which I couldn't see on their opening weekends due to being away. When I returned, they'd pretty much disappeared without trace, and the only alternative was to wait for the DVD or streaming access. Mm-hmm. Last month, 13 Lives was barely out in the cinema before Netflix pulled out. And of course, we are increasingly seeing Disney Pixar release movies for streaming only. All this seems to be happening without a word of protest, at least until today's Guardian story. The reality is that
there's been loads of protests
are being loaded against cinemas. And as things stand, I think we're looking at mass closures of cinemas over the next few years, unless a stand is taken against it. We've already seen this year View being taken over by its lenders, and Cineworld is on the brink. You guys have successfully launched campaigns for the Cinema Code of Conduct and unofficially against 3D movies, but surely this cause dwarfs everything. Netflix, Amazon, Disney should be giving cinemas a fair chance by ensuring their films get full cinematic releases of a reasonable duration and should permit such films being available in parallel in cinemas and via streaming. And at the same time, independent and mid-range films need cinemas to give them a proper run. Over to you guys. Your word counts for a lot.
Okay. So, firstly, people have been protesting and shouting about this for a long time. There isn't anything new about this argument. There is the French alternative, which is that unless the window between a theatrical release and a streaming release is 17 years, a film cannot be eligible for competition. Here's my take on it. Being opposed to simultaneous distribution is like being opposed to Wednesday. You can dislike it as much as you want. It's coming round. There's nothing you can do about it. Simultaneous distribution has actually been something of a reality for quite a long time. As I used to say, we had simultaneous distribution for years. It was just called piracy. Whether you like it or not, the future is simultaneous releasing. That's it. Just get used to it. So what you have to do is to ask yourself, how can we do that in the best possible way? My points of agreement are, Green Knight nearly didn't get a theatrical release. It was really had to be kind of campaigned for. And for a long time, we thought we weren't going to be able to see it in cinemas. So when it ended up that it was in cinemas, even for that brief period, it was something of a relief. What I would like is a situation in which streaming services have a better attitude towards theatrically platforming their films. Bear in mind, Netflix still don't allow box office figures or viewing figures. No, there's still this kind of real worry about any kind of figures getting out. What I would imagine as a perfect future is that everyone is given the opportunity to see something on the small screen or the big screen if they would like. Now, bear in mind, a lot of small distributors started putting their movies available on their own online services simply because they could not get them into cinemas. When Barbarian Sound Studio came out, for example, there were people who were only able to see it on the online platform because there wasn't a cinema nearby showing it. Many people will know that if you live somewhere where there isn't an art house cinema nearby, my nearest art house cinema is the Harbour Lights in Southampton. I live in the New Forest. That's 50 minutes journey away, 40 minutes journey away to get there. It's just how it is because of where we live. If you live in London, you can't throw a stick without hitting a cinema. So what the best you can hope for is a future in which the movies are available in both arenas and people are able to decide which arena they see them in. And that is to do with us first accepting that this is the future and not attempting to fight it, but attempting to work with it. There is no point in railing against simultaneous distribution. It's here. This is how it's going to work out. And I am also confident that under the right circumstances, those cinemas that offer the service that people want will thrive. I choose to see films on the big screen, even if I can see them on streaming, if I like the cinema. I had the great joy of seeing In the Earth in Southampton, and it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful to see it projected. And I'm sure it loses an awful lot on the small screen. But it's to do with embracing the future and not railing against it. This is the way it is. And if you think it's not, look at what's happening in France. That is not a solution that's going to work.
What's happening in France?
There are these whole things. Well, if it's not, if the gap between its theatrical release and its online release isn't this much, well, then we don't consider it to be a proper film. That's not going to help anybody. That's really not going to help anybody. The Cannes Film Festival had a big, all this fretting about, should Netflix movies be eligible for Oscars? Yes, they should. It doesn't matter whether you like it or not. That is just how the future is. So what you need to do is engage with it positively. Go, fine. How can we ensure that films that are available on streaming services are given a theatrical life if there is a market for it? Well, one thing is we can prove that there is a market for it. And also, how can we deal with the fact that some people do not have a cinema near them but may want to see a film the week it comes out without illegally downloading it from Pirate Bay?
It sounds though Christian might be happy if maybe it's just got 2 weeks in the cinema.
Yes, and at the moment, I agree that the window is too small, and I absolutely agree that what we need to do is to convince Netflix, for example, that a week isn't enough. 2 weeks would be better, but more importantly, that will not damage their own streaming investment. Because the anxiety from the streaming services point of view is every person who pays to see something in the cinema isn't paying to see it on our streaming service, which is the most unbelievably short-sighted way of looking at it. Because as we all know, people often subscribe to streaming services because they have movies that they like. Mm-hmm. And how do they know they like them? Because they've already seen them.
Well, that's the answer, and a conversation that will probably continue.
Yes, but it is the future. Like it or not, it is the future. Here comes the future, and you can't run from it. If you've got a blacklist, I want to be on it.
Correspondence at kermitomeo.com. An email from Barry Green to the good folks with the glasses. I've been pondering the writing of this email for some months now. The story begins with me sitting in front of a battered old Grundig, watching Sparky's Magic Piano.
Oh, wow. That's, you know,
horror.
Yeah, that moment in, you know, I will do whatever you want for now.
I had those on records.
Yeah. It's really scary.
This is the first cartoon I can remember watching and understanding with her. The her in this email, it's a very long email, but which we've edited down. Hopefully we've edited it okay, Barry. Is Barry's mother.
Okay.
It continues through the BBC TV series of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and various incarnations of Grot Bags, the opening credits of L.A. Law and our first sight of a T-Rex and an infuriating Stalin biopic starring Robert Duvall that my mother made me watch with her at least 30 times while studying for her degree in history. It also meanders past the wonderful makeup of Dick Tracy and many other places before arriving once more in front of that same battered old Grundig to watch a TV series called Supernatural. Mum immediately loved the sound of the 67 Chevy Impala featured in that series, and because of this, I discovered that she was a closet petrol head. I would learn much of what I know now of my mum as an individual from similar throwaway comments uttered during television or cinematic binges. From there, we got through Boston Legal, Night of the Living Dead, The Thing, Shaun of the Dead, and many others. We broke bad with Walter White, watched Deadwood grow from a campsite into a frontier boomtown. She shouted, "Hulk smash!" in a cinema full of her own baffled pupils and learned that lycanthropy makes a fantastic metaphor for puberty. In fact, Mum once confided that had she been blessed with a daughter, presumably minus the werewolf, she'd be blessed with a daughter, she'd have liked her to be like Ginger Fitzgerald from Ginger Snaps, presumably minus the werewolf thing. She learned to love the Groundhog Day loop storytelling mechanic and later fell in love with it all over again, watching Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow, All You Need Is Kill, whatever they ended up calling it. But all stories end, and my mother's story ended before she had seen so much of what she had hoped would continue to enliven her life and expand her horizons. She wanted to see Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. This is not like many mothers, I would suggest. Again, for the Groundhog Day-style narrative loop. She wanted to watch The Strangest Game of Hide-and-Seek in Ready or Not. She wanted to check in on Mark Watney once more and see if he made it home safely from Mars this time. She wanted to finally visit Westeros and visit the Starks, the Lannisters, and Mother of Dragons. She desperately looked forward to meeting Dream of the Endless and his siblings, Despair, Desire, Delirium, Destiny, Destruction, and Death. This is a Sandman reference. Sadly, she only met the latter, but I hope for her sake that Neil Gaiman got that particularly psycho pomp just right. So why am I writing this email to people I will never meet? Because my mum found a trove of Kermit and May reviews on YouTube and listened to them, using them to inform her on what we might watch next. Because she loved Jason Isaacs in The Death of Stalin, as we all did. Because I found her sobbing one night after she'd listened to what I should call the Star Wars email, and because of the reflective conversation that we had afterwards, she credited me with introducing her to so many things that she would never have seen otherwise. Whether it was a gay couple forced to live apart in Love is Strange, or the most intrepid government worker in The Troll Hunter. Without you, my mother's life would have been much less vibrant, and I would have been denied the opportunity to know this wonderful, interesting woman who loved superheroes, video games, comics, and so much more in quite the same way that I eventually did, all because of a mutual love of wondrous tales and fantastical narratives. Two thumbs up. Yours in heartfelt gratitude, Barry Green. How about that?
Well,
Barry, I mean,
it's very moving.
It is. And if we were able, as you say, to enliven your mother's life and your life, then it was our pleasure, of course. Correspondence at kermanandmayer.com.
Got something in the eye?
Shall I read another email or shall we do one frame back? What would you like?
I need a buffer. Do you mind?
Yes, let's do a buffer. Okay, so here's another email. From Daisy in Sussex.
Can you make it light and flippant?
Yes, well, it is really.
Okay.
Dear Henry Jones Jr. and Henry Jones Jr. Jr., I write this email to you whilst bussing back home to the UK, having just spent 3 weeks working on a Roman archaeological site in Italy.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite niche.
Okay, yeah.
I'm a classics student with the University of Cambridge.
I'm a classics student, or I'm a classics student?
A classics.
Okay, fine.
A classic student.
I'm a classics student. What, you live in a squat?
I think Daisy almost certainly gets The Economist and understands jokes about the French Constitution. A classics student at the University of Cambridge, and together with 18 others, we've been beavering away trying to unearth a Roman town in the scorching summer heatwave. Mm-hmm. However, this doesn't mean that our film viewing appetite has been in any way lessened. In fact, each week I have dutifully downloaded the 4 current installments of the Indiana Jones franchise.
Indiana Jones.
Which around 8 of us have eagerly awaited each Saturday afternoon with bated breath. You would think a bunch of archaeologists wouldn't want to watch this stuff, but anyway.
It's a thing in which archaeologists get to be cool and have hats and whips.
I hadn't thought of that. To anyone procrastinating watching these films, or to anyone who hasn't seen them for a while, for that matter, I implore you in the strongest possible terms to watch each and every one of these fun and apologetically silly classics. I think you probably mean
unapologetically.
I mean, for a classic student, you just... And yes, that includes Crystal Skull. And lo, we come to the crux of my electronic correspondence with your good selves.
Here we go.
Having recently sat down in our hotel's dining room with 8 others, crowded around my laptop to watch the much maligned 2008 entry, I asked myself, just why is this film so vehemently hated? Is it incredibly stupid? Yes. Is Indy's lack of archaeological technique quite funny to watch? Yes. Is it a fun romp for 2 solid entertainment hours? Absolutely, yes. Given Dr. Kermode's recent penchant for silly action films, scenes of Gerard Buttface frolicking through the smouldering ruins of suburbia in Greenland come to mind, I believe a redemptive arc for Crystal Skull is in order. There are many, many things wrong with it, but equally so many fun and playful elements of it, I feel compelled to write in defence of it to your good selves. More broadly, I would like to rally my fellow church members to give silly action films a chance. They are the perfect antidote to our current times of uncertainty and fear on the global stage, and always go down nicely with a cup of tea, missus. Also, I want to use this opportunity to thank the incredible team of the Interamna Lorenis site for such a wonderful experience on the dig, as well as the production team. Tinkety tonk, blah, blah, blah. Yours in Classicist Crescent, Daisy from Sussex. Heritage listener, current reigning Monopoly champion of our family. And P.S. the quote, "This isn't archaeology, this is a race against evil,"
yes,
from The Last Crusade, became a staple of the site for much of the trip post-viewing. Anyway, there we go, from that corner.
Can I just remind myself what I thought about? I'm looking up my
Crystal
2000.
Skull.
Yeah. Harrison Ford might, this is what I wrote about it. Harrison Ford might still crack the whip as a hat fancying hero indie, but there's a whiff of ordinariness about this long delayed franchise revival. While Spielberg might have promised audiences a double helping of cinematic popcorn with extra frosting on top, it's hard to dispel the sense of been there, done that, as Jones romps from atomic test grounds to ancient temples haunted by the ghosts of Von Daniken and Close Encounters. Shia LaBeouf awkwardly apes Brando's Wild One as the heir to Indy's aging throne, and David Cope's script remains less than nimble throughout. Come back, Frank Darabont.
There you go. You're part of the problem.
I am part of the problem. Yeah.
Anyway, so Daisy, who knows what she's talking about,
no,
is asking for a reevaluation of Crystal Skull.
Yes. Well, I actually thought that I hadn't disliked it that much, but just reading my review, I realised that I disliked it more than I. But then it was 2008.
What did we know?
you know...
Nothing.
I don't remember anything between, you know, 2008 last night.
Correspondence at kerbetameo.com.
Did I tell you that I went to see Georgie Fame? I did.
You did.
Yeah, because I can't remember anything.
Excellent. One Frame Back. This is where we explore films that are connected in some way to one of the week's releases.
I just say connected very tangentially.
Very indeed.
Very tangentially.
But we're looking at Weekend
Away. Very loosely.
Inspired by Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Just do me one sentence on Bodies times three.
It is a group of people gather at a house for a hurricane party. They start playing a murder in the dark game where things get real.
I've always quite fancied, in a sort of an irresponsible way, going to a hurricane party.
Have you heard? I've never even heard of it.
Yes, there are people. There are kind of people who chase bad weather in America, where obviously they have a lot of, you know, they chase the tornado and they get far too close. And then
yeah, that's Twister. That's the plot of Twister.
But I always think that would be quite exciting. I find bad weather quite thrilling. So I'm sort of there.
Okay, I'm sort of not.
Okay.
No.
Well, if I get invited to a hurricane party,
don't invite me.
You won't be
the
last one. Anyway, so that's where we are with Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Yeah.
Cal says, Nuts in May has to be mentioned. I can hear the name Keith in one way since seeing this film. What is the significance of that?
It's Keith and Candice Marie. Keith and Candice Marie in Mike Leigh's Nuts in May, which is one of the most joyous things in the whole world. It was, as I've told you before, after I came out of back surgery, I was told the two things you can't do is sneeze and laugh. The good lady, Professor Her Indoors, decided it would be a good idea to go and buy a VHS of Nuts in May. I lay on the floor in my mother's house, which is where I was staying, and nearly put myself back in hospital laughing at Nuts in May. Keith, they're not listening, Keith.
Anyway, Cal says, not sure if this counts, but also The Blair Witch Project in 1999. For me, one of the best horror films, just the atmosphere of that film terrorised me. No end. Will Buckner says, Coherence in 2013 by James Ward Birkett. Would that be Birkett? Birkett.
Oh, you asking me about pronunciations?
Is it is an amazing micro-budget thriller with high concept plot that still fills me with dread after five viewings. Eight friends meet for a dinner party when a comet flies by, causing a power cut. Then some familiar faces appear at their door.
It's a very interesting film.
Gaz Jones says, Weekend at Bernie's.
You probably still find our review of it online.
I don't believe in guilty pleasures. Quite right. Tom Batten says, Sightseers. Daniel Woodrow says, it has to be the eminently quotable, infinitely rewatchable masterpiece that is With Nell and I.
On holiday by mistake.
More than 30 years on, it's still absolutely glorious. The finest wines available to humanity all round, please. James Howe says, not necessarily a favourite, but very much enjoyed the recent Bergman Island. Mm-hmm. Okay. Calvin McKinnon says, People on Sunday, directed by Robert C. Odmack and Edgar G. Ulmer, with a script by Billy Wilder. It's an early docu-fiction hybrid about friends from Weimar-era Berlin enjoying a Sunday at the beach. It takes on a strange poignancy, as we know what then happened in the years ahead. So you could say a disparate bunch of movies for our
and
weekend
away. Not all strictly weekend. I mean, some, you know, like I think Nuts in May is the best part of a week.
Okay. So I'm not quite sure how you're going to decide this, but what would be your choice for a One Frame Back?
Well, okay, since the choice of the, you know, a weekend away thing is completely random anyway, so it's just, you know, movies in which people go away. And I love With Nell and I, and if you were watching the pro, I was wearing a, you know, a Tea Room's Finest Wines and Cakes t-shirt the other day, which you said you haven't commented on my Fabulous Rock Against Racism t-shirt that
I haven't.
Wearing.
No. Can I comment then about your Fabulous
Rock
t-shirt?
Yeah, you can. Go ahead.
It's a nice t-shirt you've got on.
Thank you. I'm going to go for Nuts in May. Somebody, Tom Batten, chose Sightseers! Exclamation mark. Sightseers is essentially Nuts in May with axes. And there was a long period when Ben Wheatley was kind of insisting that it wasn't Nuts in May with axes. And then he finally gave up and went, yeah, no, of course that's what it is. It's such a wonderful drama. There is a Mike Leigh season, incidentally, which is happening in London's Covent Garden. Mike Leigh in conversation. It has begun. It runs until the 30th of October, in which Mike Leigh is in conversation after following screenings of his feature films. I don't believe Nuts in May is in that collection. But Mike Leigh talking about his features is always great. I actually did I recorded me visiting all the sites at which they shot Nuts in May, the beach, the cliff, the camper park, because that's how much I love it. Nuts in May is one of the funniest films I've ever seen. And as I said, it nearly put me in hospital. And Sightseers is essentially Nuts in May remade with more gore.
So you're going for both?
I'm going for Nuts in May because it's the source, it's the origin. Okay. And if you haven't seen it, I'm certain it's available online, BFI Player or something like that. It's so wonderful. It's so funny and so sharp.
So thank you very much. Next week, amongst all the other movies, Mark is reviewing Jackie Brown. Again. Because it's the anniversary.
Quentin Tarantino's best film, by a mile.
And our guest is the one and only Pam Grier. So we would love your Elmore Leonard adaptation movies, please.
Oh, okay, that's a good choice.
Plenty to choose from. 3:10 to Yuma. Out of Sight, Get Shorty, Mr. Majestic. Anything to choose?
When Get Shorty came out, I was working at Radio 1, the top pop station.
I think I was as well.
Yes, and somebody said, why does Get Shorty have a picture of Mark Kermode on the poster? And it was John Travolta in black shades. That was the period in which I could be mistaken for John Travolta.
Correspondence at kermodeomeo.com. You can find us on our social channels.
I'm so young.
Top Fact, which is spotted when I was watching Jackie Brown again, just to remind me about the movie. As they do the credits at the beginning of the movie, the casting for Jackie Brown is done by someone called
Jackie Brown.
So I'm going to ask Pam.
It's about a real thing.
As to whether it's just a total coincidence or whether they were looking for a thing and Jackie Brown, the top caster, was in. They said, we'll just call it.
And that's during the opening sequence when she's like moving it. And am I right in thinking, because it's a while since I saw it, I will watch it again before we do it next week. Does it open to Across 110th Street?
Yes, that's the first
piece of music. Which is just a brilliant needle drop. And did it hold up for you?
I'm halfway through it, but I've forgotten almost all of it. But I'm so definitely good. Enjoying it.
And I think it is far and away Tarantino's best film.
Correspondence at kermodeomeo.com. Take it or leave it, you decide. Word of mouth, the thing that you're watching, maybe people aren't watching, maybe everybody is watching it, and you think it would be interesting if we discussed it on the programme. This week's You Decide was suggested by many of you, but here's Jennifer in Austin. If you are missing a high-stakes, smart, dark drama with a profound story arc, a dash of Lady Macbeth and a little touch of Breaking Bad, then you need look no further than Ozark on Netflix. It really is must-see television, set in the mysterious Ozarks, but actually filmed in Georgia. The series is packed with fully wrapped... I wonder why you would think it would make sense
to... Tax breaks.
Of course. It's a very good reason. The series is packed with fully rounded characters and tip-top performances, as you Brits might see. Please give it a watch. Anyway, so that's... Thank you very much, Jennifer, in Austin. And if you've got something else to recommend, we'd love to hear it from you. Now, I think you were probably watching Ozark anyway, weren't you?
So what happened was a friend of ours, Janice, in Belfast. Hello, Janice.
Janice. Yeah,
said, you have to see Ozark. It's really, really great. And we were like, at that point, we were wiring and we were, you know, Breaking Bad-ing and didn't really have time in our life for another series. But we started Ozarking and boy, did we get the bug. So, crime drama, it's a weird even to call it a crime drama because it's so much more than that. Created by, and I hope I'm pronounced, Bill Dubuque, Mark Williams, ran for 4 seasons, the last of which has only recently completed. And we finished watching it whilst away on the cruise. That was because obviously my whole family came on the cruise with us.
Discounted.
Discounted.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cheap cabin. And boy, it was cheap. Received a total of 32 Primetime Emmy Award nominations, including 2 for Outstanding Drama, a whole bunch of other things. Jason Bateman is Marty Bird, a financial advisor in Chicago whose partners get on the wrong side of a Mexican drug cartel, which is a kind of classic setup. To save his skin, you know, like literally at the moment at which he is about to lose his life, he says, look, because he happens to have a pamphlet for the Ozarks, he says, look, more waterfront space than anywhere else. I can go there and set up a money laundering business that can launder money faster and more efficiently than anything we're doing here in Chicago. Don't kill me. Let me do it and I will prove to you that I can do this. And I said, okay, go do it. And he gives him a really, really short time period. So his entire family have to relocate to the Ozarks and he immediately has to start money laundering. His wife, Wendy, played by Laura Linney, and the 2 kids, they relocate. The kids obviously aren't happy about this, and the kids don't really know why it's happening. So he starts trying to buy his way into businesses, you know, waterfront businesses with which to launder money. He needs to do it faster. So he starts investing in, there's a local church that doesn't have a church. It does services on the water. Well, okay, fine, I'll build a church. At which point he discovers that those services on the water are being used by local poppy growers, the Snells. Jacob, played by Peter Mullen, and Darlene, played by Lisa Emery, who turns out to be one of the great TV characters of all time. The, you know, damn it, Darlene, you just can't do that. Paths also cross with the Langmores, notably Ruth, played by Julia Garner. Now, I only really knew Julia Garner before from The Assistant, in which she's fantastic. Started watching Ozark, didn't recognise her as the woman from The Assistant, and she is about to be Madonna in the Madonna biopic.
Wow.
And she is absolutely spectacular. I mean, just spectacular. Comes from a sort of, you know, crime-ridden family. You know, she's sort of, I come from trash, but proves herself really smart and really adept at running Marty's businesses and then so much more. Now, on one level, the whole series seems to have been designed to work around that thing that Jason Bateman does, which is, you know, no matter which film he's in, the Jason Bateman thing is, So it's like, okay, fine. So you have to launder $5 million by next Wednesday. Okay. Yeah, we do that. Okay, you know, so-and-so's been murdered, this thing, and that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But it's so much more than that. Laura Linney, her character, who begins, we're introduced to her as the wife who has cheated on her husband because her husband has just become so wrapped up in his own world. And then during the course of it, there's a kind of Lady Macbeth thing, which was mentioned in that email. But also there is this brilliant mirroring of her and Darlene, these two characters who are apparently completely chalk and cheese, but actually end up leading this kind of mirrored existence. The character of Ruth, just, it's like watching a character grow before your very eyes over the course of the series. Felix Salles' Omar Navarro is quiet threat personified. Every time he was on screen, I was terrified. He doesn't raise his voice. He just does this really, really, really quietly threatening thing. Amazingly, each series, I think, got better. Now, I really enjoyed it. It may not be profound, but it is profoundly entertaining. And it was one of the things I found myself thinking, oh yeah, tonight we're going to watch an episode of Ozark. That's great. That gives me something to look forward to. I've got an hour of Ozark. And then you'd watch it, and then you'd do another one almost immediately. It's not got the, you know, the world-changing Dickensian depth of The Wire. It's probably not Breaking Bad, and it's not Better Call Saul, but it's compulsively viewable with great performances. And I never got bored. I just wanted to go back to that world because it was I just enjoyed being in it so much. I thought it was terrific.
I got to the end of the first series and stopped.
Oh, so you knew all this anyway? That was
well, I knew some of it.
Okay.
I wasn't going to interrupt.
Well, thank you. It was very polite of you.
Yeah, I think so. But so I thought, I'm really...
Did you? Oh, okay.
But I thought it was fine. But maybe...
In my opinion, it got better with every series. And by the time it got to the end, it was... I mean, there were moments in it. It was like, no!
How does it finish?
Can I just say, it has a brilliant finish.
Okay.
It finishes with a bang in the best possible sense.
Can I skip a whole series,
no,
do you think?
No,
can I go to
no,
episode
no,
four?
No. No, you can't.
Series three?
No.
Halfway through series
no.
two? That's a lot of television I've got to watch. Anyway, so Ozark is our take it or leave it. Thank you very much to Jennifer in Austin for suggesting it. If there's something you would love us to just get stuck into... correspondence@kermitandmayo.com. That is it for take two for this week. A new take one out on Friday. Thank you very much indeed for subscribing. And don't forget our fabulous London show.
London. It's all
O2,
London.
And we would love to see it at Halloween.
Can I just say, the O2, are we in the O2? The O2?
The Indigo bit.
How big is that?
Well, it's big enough, you know, it's big enough for us to mention this a lot.
Will we be able to run on and shout, hello, London, it's Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, I think so. I saw the Eagles there. So,
well, in the Indigo?
In the Indigo bit.
Oh, so you've been in the Indigo?
Yes.
Okay, it was So the Eagles played the place that we're we are going to play the venue that the Eagles played.
Yes, the only band better than the Sex Pistols.
That's right.
I mentioned last week. So that's where it is. So curbandmail.com, go and have a look, buy a ticket, wear something spooky, and we'll see you then. Get your tickets now.
Blimey.